You are listening to episode 42 of The Big Web Show. This is the show where we talk about everything web that matters. It's hosted by my good friend, Jeffrey Zeldman. I'm Dan Benjamin. And we would like to just up front thank our two sponsors. It's audiblepodcast.com and sourcebits.com. We'll tell you more about those as the show progresses. We'd also like to say thanks to photocase.com, a new photography marketplace for creative stock photos. Start your love affair with Photocase now. You can use 5x5 as a coupon code and you will save 15% on your purchase. So thanks, photocase.com. But right now, without any further ado, Jeffrey Zeldman, how are you doing today, sir?
I am fantastic, except I made the mistake of wearing orange on St. Patrick's Day.
You were saying before the show that's not the best idea for some reason.
No, I live in New York City. Not the best idea. It's.
Did they stone you there or anything?
No, but I work on Fifth Avenue where the parade happens, so it's really not the best idea. It's completely not the best idea. And, you know, I wouldn't have tried to make any kind of, you know, it's weird. You can wear plum or gray and nobody thinks you're, but if you wear orange, it's like you're saying the F word to St. Patrick's Day, which I would never do. And right. It's really like you're saying, it's like, you know, lay one on me. Come on, Jimmy boy, lay one on me.
It looks like our guests, though, who are not wearing orange, they're more prepared, I guess, for St. Patrick's Day than we are. I also want to mention, but for those who are joining us on video, Jeffrey, behind you, there's an overwhelmingly large amount of boxes and storage, and you were explaining that you've been evicted from your closet.
Yeah, so those are books from a book of Bard, like Aaron Cassane's new content strategy book that we just published last week. And we have successful startups happening. Yes, that's the book. Thank you very much.
Sure.
The Elements of Content Strategy by Aaron Cassane. Excellent book. Number 3 in a Book Apart series. But we used to have lots of closet space. And then we started sharing our space with some startups. And they're doing so well that there's people having meetings in the bathroom. So, yeah. So
that's an indication that your startup is successful, is that you have to meet in the bathroom.
Yeah. And speaking of successful startups, we have Philippe Fortes and Scott Kellum, two of the brainiacs behind Tree Saver, an awesome standards-based publishing platform for magazine publishing on any device. Using HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. It's really Philippe's brainchild. And Philippe has been, although he looks very young, he's been working on layout technology since like 2000 or so, 2002, when he joined Microsoft's Windows Presentation Foundation team. I know you worked on the New York Times Reader. I know you've worked at consultancies working on newspapers like Seattle Post-Intelligencer or Forbes, Bloomberg. So it kind of makes sense that you would come up with something, you and your partners would come up with something that strategic for publishers. And we're going to talk about that and many other things. And joining Philippe and us is Scott Kellum. And Scott is was a type designer at Darden Studio in Brooklyn, where he spent months drawing the very, very intense details of fonts. And now he is, and he's also, for those who think we only have like really old people on the show, like the hosts, that's not really true. Scott was in college not that long ago at Parsons New School for Design, and is now doing mostly of the CSS for Tree Saver. So welcome to the show, guys. Thanks for coming. And
thanks for having us.
I write a lot about Tree Saver. I think it's in the air. I think it's a pretty but for those who haven't heard about it, could one of you, Philippe, perhaps just take us through what is Tree Saver and why? What and why?
Sure. Well, I mean, The what has been an interesting one to explain in a succinct way. I'm still trying to get the elevator pitch quite right. But basically, at its core, Tree Saver is a JavaScript framework that makes it easy to construct magazine-style layouts and kind of these rich reading experiences in the browser just using standards-compliant HTML and CSS. So there's no app to install. There's no other language to learn. You can just kind of do this all via the tools that web designers already know. And
so you could, for instance, you could say we're publishing to the iPad, but you don't have to make an iPad version.
The idea is to make something that works across all these devices and works well. So you've got a site that if you're on the iPad adapts well, reflows the layout, still responds to all the touch commands. But if you go onto the desktop, you know, it still works well as well, or the iPhone
and Android and whatever else comes down the pike. Anything that has a standards compliant browser at its core. So Opera devices with Opera in them, devices with the the new Windows stuff.
You know, I have to test those. If Microsoft, my old employer, would send me, some dev kit, that'd be nice. But in theory, it should all work. It works on IE 7, 8, and 9, and I'll have to test exactly on all the devices. We're still building up our mobile testing lab.
I think they're going to use IE 9 in the phone, right? They surely.
Hopefully. The original versions, or at least the pre-release ones that I played with, were using a variant of IE 7, which is probably the worst thing you could do.
Why?
So hopefully they fix that. Why? I'm sure there was 18,000 meetings internally about that, and it just came to a decision. Not a good one, but they've probably got a long list of reasons.
How was it working at Microsoft?
You know, it was interesting. It was a great learning experience. I think I came out of there straight out of school, and actually during the first tech bust. So literally all my other offers had evaporated away. I'd actually interned there all 3 years throughout college as well. So I kind of knew how things worked there. And, a great thing about Microsoft is from day one, they kind of put you in an interesting situation. So on day one, I was a program manager for a team of 5 developers and 6 testers, basically straight out of school. And that's pretty exciting, right? There was a lot of responsibility to do there, and there were a lot of things to learn. Ultimately, though, Microsoft was kind of going through this strange transition period, right? The bust had just happened. The way they had paid and kind of promoted people was very dependent upon growing and growing very quickly. So a lot of compensation was based on stock options. A lot of career path was just based on the team below you growing very quickly. And essentially, around the time when I joined, both of those kind of stopped. Microsoft's stock, if you watch the past 10 years, has basically flatlined. And then also the company just wasn't quite growing in the same way, and people weren't departing as much. So, after about 4 years, the product I was working on, Windows, still hadn't quite shipped. The original plan was supposed to ship in 2 years. Also just career-wise, I wasn't really seeing where I wanted to go. So it was time to leave.
What was the product you worked on?
It had possibly one of the worst names ever. It was called the Windows Presentation Foundation or Framework. See, I don't even remember. It used to be called Avalon was the code name. And really, I think the bad name was really a marketing decision because they just wanted it to be part of Windows. And the idea was that they were trying to sell a new platform to replace HTML, Flash, and everything else that would run on Windows only as a way to drive Vista and, future Windows sales.
Wow.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like what they'd want to do, given given what they learned in the 90s and in the early 2000s, given Microsoft's sort of slow turnaround, with the release of IE 7 and then 8, their emphasis on, their return to standards, their current support for HTML5.
That was much later. You got to remember, this was 02. So to give you an idea.
This was their last ditch. We're going to make something that only works on our platform to increase sales on a platform that had like 99%. I mean, they really weren't threatened by Mac or Linux at that time.
They were killing it. And I mean,
they were killing everything.
I was hired in to actually work on the IE team. I had interned on IE 6 right after the release of IE 5.5. And by the time I got there, they had dismantled the IE team and just placed me on this Avalon team.
Chris Wilson or anyone?
Yeah, actually, Chris was my manager for about 2.5 years, I think.
Great guy.
Great guy. I mean, there was a lot of very, very smart people there. I mean, through that, I met Tantek Celik, who's incredibly bright, and all sorts of other, you know, these people have been developing browsers all over the place for a long time. And there's still a lot of very, very bright people there. And a lot of them have now transitioned back into the browser. But at the time, basically, the Microsoft divested completely in the browser. Part of this was strategic. Part of it was, you know, internally they had this team called NetDocs, which was basically implementing Microsoft Office in the browser. And this team grew to be actually fairly huge. It had over 100 people there. And it was actually fairly sophisticated. And, you know, web developers today should actually be fairly thankful that that team was around, because they pushed a lot of the features that were key in a lot of the web innovation you see in the past 10 years. Stuff like XML HTTP request was put in there because of the web version of Outlook. And you have a lot of other functionality there that was really driven by these guys in Microsoft very early, 99, 2001, pushing the browser as far as they could go. Now, at the time, computers were a bit slower. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
It just took Jesse James Garrett to give it a better name, right? To start talking about Ajax, because if they, you know, if the people behind Windows Presentation Foundation had, you know, XHTTP request was not going to catch on. Right. But Ajax, very catchy.
You know, it's all about a good buzzword.
It is.
And Ajax has done a lot better than Comet for some reason, probably because Ajax is far simpler. That's how it is.
What was Comet?
You know, Comet's kind of a variant where you're doing basically a server push. So if you're a browser, imagine you've got a chat client in a browser and you want to be able to alert the browser when there's a new chat message. You kind of keep a connection open between the browser and the server.
Cool, cool, cool. I want to hear more about Microsoft, but I don't want Scott to just languish, because we got Scott Kellum here for Pete's sake, and he's pretty awesome. So, Scott, hi.
Hey. Hey, Jeffrey.
How did Philippe sell you on TreeSaver, and how did he loop you in, and what were your qualifications to help him?
Well, TreeSaver is fascinating because it's on a shared platform, which is HTML. Pretty much everything uses HTML. So I was really excited about these solutions that are truly cross-platform. I actually got involved because Roger Black tweeted something about why are people developing apps when, you know, maybe Android's going to be the platform of 2011. It's still up in the air, but Android has a huge market share. So I tweeted back, you know, why not just build it in HTML? And got the job that way, I guess.
So you're saying you got the job over Twitter, essentially. I mean, that's how you found out about it.
That's right. That was my job application. 140 characters. So,
What you said was exactly what Roger Black had been saying for a year.
Yeah, exactly.
And what I'd been saying for like a long time. Right. We can do everything with HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. Have a nice day.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, it's just a interesting way to do things. And TreeSaver takes it to a whole nother level than what I was even thinking about. But the concepts of sort of dynamic layouts are just really intriguing and hard to work with. My background is I took the traditional design path, and when I went to Parsons for school, instead of learning about technology, because technology changes so quickly, and it gave me the tools to sort of understand, you know, maybe if I pair this old sort of more classical education with the code and my knowledge of CSS, you know, it helped me out with understanding dynamic layouts and how those work.
Now, how does TreeSaver as a platform? It's open source. It's, you know, anyone, you've released it. You guys have released it as open source. Anyone can work with it and adapt it. You also have templates, but basically, it's a platform. Yet, how is it different from, say, responsive web design as promoted by Ethan Marcotte, you know, in A List Apart and elsewhere? Ethan Marcotte has put out kind of the same idea that content should adapt to the medium that it's in, and that you make many layouts, not just one, and that you make many layouts with one, you know, core set of HTML and CSS.
Yep.
And it works in any device. So you were developing your idea at the same time, right? It's not like you read his article and said, oh, that's a good idea, I'll make a product like that. It was you were thinking, you know, other people I'm sure were thinking these along these same lines too. That's how this stuff works. But why is one thing a concept that's good, you know, that why is Ethan's idea a book concept and your idea is a platform that you can sell to a client or anyone or give away via open source?
You know, fundamentally, first of all, Ethan's done great work. And I think, you know, similar to the naming of Ajax, he came up with a great name for the whole principle. Responsive design is an excellent, excellent name. But really, I think it's in terms of the difference between TreeSaver and the type of responsive design you see, which is typically done via media queries or other things like that. Mm-hmm. A big difference with TreeSaver is we give the ability to page and do multi-column layout. So that becomes a bit more complex. So if you're going to actually change the layout on a screen in order to flow text through columns in a way that it always fits on screen, you know, similar to like what you would see in a lot of iPad apps or a normal magazine, that right. requires a bit more code. And it's not just something straightforward that a browser can do. Most right. responsive design is a matter of, you know, changing widths and changing some positions, but you're still fundamentally scrolling a page and it's still relatively straightforward.
So this is a lot more complicated. If for those who those following along on audio, I mean, think about an iPad app. Think about an iPad magazine app. You shift the iPad from vertical to horizontal, and the layout reflows, but it still works. And typically that's done using proprietary Apple stuff. And here you're doing it with CSS and JavaScript. How complex is the JavaScript that you're how let me put that another way. If I'm your customer, if I'm a developer and I want to use TreeSaver, how steep is the learning curve and how, I mean, is it like Ruby on Rails where you've configured a bunch of stuff, but I still need to have chops to work with it?
You know, one of the big design goals here was to not require any JavaScript skills in order to create this. Really, all you need to use is HTML and CSS. Now, there's some conventions you have to learn in terms of how to structure a file and what type of markup we consume. And we're actively working on making that a bit simpler. But really, the idea here is that you really don't need to know much about how the JavaScript itself works. You set up, essentially, as a designer, what you do is you create, we call them grids. Think of them as empty page skeletons. And so they'll do something like, you know, I'll define, oh, here's a column here, here's another column, and here's an image in the upper right-hand corner. You do that all via HTML and CSS. And the framework takes the content and just automatically fills in those text containers and places images whenever they have them.
So I've got some kind of, I guess, a little more technical questions. And this is responding to some of the questions that the people in the chat room who are listening live and asking their comments are asking. You know, so you say here, and you know, we've been showing some screenshots of it while people have been tuned in. On treesaverjs.com, this is where people can go to just download this thing and you know, you've got great documentation. If I wanted to just start implementing this thing, what would I do? I mean, I'm not saying, you know, tell me which files to edit on the show, but I'm saying how hard is this for a person who's running? And this is what they were asking in the chat room. What if they're running WordPress as their blog engine and they want to create versions of it like this? They want to do a magazine and they want to use TreeSaver to do it. What's involved from a technical standpoint in getting that set up? Is this something that a somewhat technical designer could do? Do you need to hire a developer for this? What kind of knowledge do you need and what's involved to get this thing going?
Well, as Philippe said, you know, no JavaScript is required for doing this. It's pretty easy to, you can just do this with a WordPress theme instead of a plugin to get just the basics working. So
where
what you
is
do
that
is,
theme? Where is that theme? I want that theme.
Well,
it is being built. It's not ready yet, but
reels.
It's being built.
For reals.
So,
yep.
Okay. Yeah, it's relatively easy to actually implement. You just need to link to a file that we call resources.html, and that contains the page structures, or grids as we call them. So, and then a CSS file, of course, to, you know.
But it's that easy. It's as simple as linking to a few files and getting this thing in place, and you will very magically just get something that works.
Right. Well, and where the complexities lie is how do you generate the figures, as we call them, or well, it figures a HTML5 tag anyway. But the images, the title assets, the video assets, and how do you package those in a way that TreeSaver can read those? Because everything is set to scale, so we have all these multiple sizes. So say you want an image, but you want it two columns, maybe it'll shrink down to one column on the phone. We have the ability to define multiple assets for these images and video.
Am I cropping different versions myself like I would do art directing any project? Or is this also something kind of automated where you supply, where the art director supplies one major image and then using some kind of Photoshop scripts or something or some kind of server technology, the different image sizes are cut automatically? Is it more of a human thing, more of an editorial thing?
With our work for Nomad, it's the photo department just sort of sends in various crops into the content management system, and the content management system just resizes the images like it would, you know, any content management system resizes images these days.
But you could just pick those defaults and set your CMS up to do it that way, and it's just going to work.
Right. Exactly.
And this is all stuff in the documentation too. I mean, people can go and read the docs, and so this is all pretty reasonable to do.
Is the content management system open source as well?
We don't have a content management system fixed yet. What we're doing, Nomad built their own. We've got another client that's using Drupal, and the idea is we'll provide adapters for major CMSs, and then, you know, of course, have documentation for other CMSs or any other custom things. But yeah, the idea is to have make it really easy to integrate. And I think in terms of the image sizing, you know, we'll provide also some native ways to do that. I think the biggest reason you might have some human intervention, though, is if you want completely different aspect ratio crops. So imagine you want to have one that's zoomed into somebody's face on a small mobile screen, whereas on the larger screen, you want kind of a wider angle view. And that's not something we can really do automatically.
Of course
not. At least not well.
In the near future, I mean, yeah, you can tell by using faces technology and say, face recognition technology and, you know, on your computer, and you can see it. It's kind of cool, but it's not there yet.
And most art directors will kill you if you do that to their photos automatically.
Right. Sure. Rightfully so. No, rightfully so. So how are you going to, here's another question. If you're doing all this work and you're a startup company and you're giving the technology away, and I asked Matt when he was on, Matt from WordPress when he was on, because this is something I still have trouble understanding. If you're giving the technology away, how are you supporting the work of improving the technology? How are you making money? How are you paying the people who work on it if you're also giving it away via open source? How does that work?
You know, it's like that old SNL skit with the first bake of change. We do it by volume. I think the key here is for us, we're trying to get the market share out there. And I think WordPress is an interesting parallel here, because you know they've got a very well received and very well adopted open source CMS, yet they also have a fairly healthy business around hosting and premium themes and all sorts of other parts of that ecosystem and even consulting. So the idea here is in a lot of ways similar, right? Build a kick-ass open source tool, and then basically you can build services around people who need need basically help or professional grade services on top of that. And, you know, there's a lot of, Red Hat does similar models. There are a variety of other models around here in open source.
Cool. I think it's time to take a quick sponsor break.
Oh, yes, it is. And actually, this one, we've got a brand new sponsor that it's very cool, because I love it when the sponsors work with us to do something that's really cool for the listeners. And audible.com, you can actually check these guys out. We have a special URL just for you guys. If you go to audiblepodcast.com/BigWebShow. This is what you get. First of all, let me take a step back here and tell you, I love audiobooks. I mean, I hardly listen to any music anymore. I just listen to podcasts and audiobooks. And audible.com, I think personally, they have the best selection. And so many of the books that they have are actually read by the authors too, which is always a lot of fun. And so here's what they're doing. You go to audiblepodcast.com/BigWebShow, and you will get a free book. And you also get a 14-day free trial, gold membership, which is a nice one. And this is something like 85,000 books that you can choose from on here. And this is great. And you download them, you listen, and this is one of my favorite things to do. I love getting books this way, especially when the authors write them. And I thought it would be fun. Jeffrey, I'm surprising you with this, but maybe you can. We talked a little about before the show about it, but I have a pick. I have a recommendation. This will be in the show notes. My recommendation for the book, it's a book that I just started listening to. It's called Delivering Happiness. It's by Tony Hsieh. Ooh. He's the CEO of Zappos. Great book. It's amazing because it really encapsulates everything that Zappos is all about. So you can find that link and links to this in the show notes. So that I would recommend that be maybe the free book. But Jeffrey, you were telling me that you have a recommendation also.
Yeah. I'm reading, listening to Keith Richards' Life.
Ah.
And this is Keith Richards' Life narrated by Johnny Depp. And speaking of delivering happiness.
Yeah.
Speaking of delivering happiness. How it's narrated by Johnny Depp, Joe Hurley, and Keith Richards, so that's great. But it's, you know, Keith Richards' Life read by Johnny Depp. I'm happy.
How could you knock that? Well, anyway, so go check that out. And again, to get your free book, you got to go to audiblepodcast.com/bigwebshow. So thanks to them for coming on board.
I got to say, Keith Richards remembers everything. That's amazing to me because I don't remember anything, and I'm me, and he's Keith Richards, and he remembers. I don't know how he does that.
Well, he's lived a very healthy life. I mean, just pure exercise, never touch anything.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, he only did organic drugs.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and narrated by Johnny Depp, Joe Hurley, Keith Richards. So Keith Richards does some of this himself on here.
Yeah.
The trip.
It's with coughing and everything. It's awesome.
All right, back to the show then.
Great sponsor. Okay, I have a question for the two gentlemen. How does the collaboration work? Are you in you're not generally in the same space, so it's remote.
Now you're still in my line of questioning, but that's all right. This is a good question. Okay. No, do it.
I wasn't aware of that. so you're not in the same space, right? So it's remote work. You have different roles and you have slightly different positions in the hierarchy. How do you work together, and what's a given day like for each of you?
You want to start, Scott?
Sure. I guess it could go either way because we kind of play off each other. But let's see. I came on almost a year ago at this point and started working with TreeSaver. And at that point, you know, it could do quite a bit, but there were certain flags that, you know, what if I want this every other page, or I want this content to only show up on the first page. So there were various design rules that I needed. So, you know, I would be like, hey, Philippe, can we implement something to help me out here? So it's sort of been a back and forth with requesting features and I guess I was the guinea pig or the beta test on, how designers are going to handle this new framework, and you know, what are some of the features that are going to be needed here?
Please.
You know, I think a lot of this process has been fairly interesting. I mean, it's kind of like building a train while you're riding it as well. And so as we go, we've been kind of learning what it takes to make these good experiences and figuring out what we need to build and in order to get there. So, you know, as Scott alluded to, I'd been working on the framework for, I don't know, 6 to 12 months before he came on board and had been doing all the design myself. And, you know,
so
wait, obviously,
six to 12 months before he was there. So how long has it taken from since day one for you to get this from day one to today? How long has this been in the works?
You know, it's almost exactly 2 years
no kidding.
Since the first prototype.
Wow.
And actually, Jeffrey was there with me. We both happened to go down to the Washington Post to work on a project there, and I demoed the very first version of TreeSaver. Do you remember that, Jeffrey?
I certainly do. I don't think they were very smart people we were talking to, but I'm not sure that it's only at that point you almost had to be a developer to get what you were showing and to get why it was awesome.
You know, we were solving a problem they didn't really know they had yet.
Exactly.
Especially before the iPad came out. Everybody's just like, what? We got a normal website and we got a WAP version. Sold, you know.
Yeah. And again, they weren't, this is not to put those people down at all. It's just to say that, you know, they had enough on their plate trying to be editors and trying, you know, dealing with content, with editorial, with sales. That's where, you know, that's their area of expertise. But it's sort of, and I recently, I did a panel at South by Southwest where I told everyone they were publishers, and I wrote a blog post about this, and like some people think it's obvious and dumb and naive, but it really, I feel like we're the people who are figuring this stuff out because the editors have enough on their plate, you know, getting us the news or getting us the, you know, making sure that the stories we read are relevant and, you know, and surviving in this very tough time for publishing and journalism. I feel like it's designers and particularly designers who've already, you know, been seasoned by 10 or more years on the web. And with the you know, all the variations that we're confronted with on the web, and all the things we can't do that we think we should be able to do, and all, you know, that we're going to figure out how this stuff's going to work. I have a kind of a strange question, but I'm really interested in the way people communicate with each other. So you're redesigning the nature of books and newspapers right now, using book and newspaper terminology probably in ways it's never worked before. Like you have a footer. But it's not a footer that's placed in a certain flow in the text. It's a footer that will appear in a different place depending on, you know, what size device is being looked at and how big the type is and lots of other stuff like that. And not only that, but you have like different kinds of navigation you've created in TreeSaver depending on the size of the device people are using. So I wonder if you're reinventing book and newspaper and magazine design terminology at all, and if you guys have come up with your own vocabulary that you wouldn't mind sharing with us for like funky little, you know, like is a table of contents still a table of contents when you guys talk about it, or is that something else? And if it's something else, why? And I'm just stabbing in the dark. You may just, the answer may be no, and that would be
sad.
You know,
there's nothing like coding to force you to name certain things and certain aspects. You know, a biggest problem we've had is the overloading of the word template. Template is a dangerous, dangerous word often if you're trying to talk about things very clearly and unambiguously. Because if you think about it, on the levels, just in existing web design, a template can be anything from the actual file that you're using to output content from a CMS to, you know, kind of the general look and feel of a page and a design, to all sorts of other things. And then we add this other dimension of needing basically a way to describe what generic pages kind of look like. So here is a page that can be constructed of two columns, or here's a page that can be constructed on an iPhone. And for that matter, a page is kind of an ambiguous term as well, right? A web page is typically just a single URL, whereas when we start paging something in a layout with TreeSaver, a single URL can have multiple pages. And, you know, Scott and I have gone back and forth a lot of times trying to kind of figure out how to talk about this in an intelligent fashion. And we've tended to go toward, you know, pages are single, bits of text. Think of them almost as like a slideshow portion of an article. Articles are an actual, you know, what used to be page, I guess, just to be confusing. And then grids are kind of these page templates, quote unquote. Scott, what else am I missing?
So pages are what HTML5 would call articles. Or pages are what HTML5 would call sections.
A lot of the semantics are nicely figured out for us in HTML5. So it's convenient to, you know, have a tag that's called article, and you know it's set. But I think, you know, grids and skins and all other things, you know, a skin might be the CSS layered on top of that, but you know, how does that affect the grids, which is sort of the rules, like, you know, does a column fall here, does a column fall there? It exists in sort of this this huge sort of overabundance of all of these terms for layouts. But for the most part, a lot of the other stuff is the same. We still use sort of columns, gutters, margins, and we sort of or at least I have in my CSS semantics, sort of toned that back down to traditional print naming.
How do you mean? Can you elaborate?
All right, so I guess we usually work with a language called Sass, which compiles down to CSS. So all of these variables we have, you know, like how big is the gutter, how big is the column, how wide are the margins, and for that, you know, I just use the traditional, you know, this is a page margin. This is, you know, as it would be in a paper book.
So some of the semantics in your HTML are structural semantics, HTML5 semantics, and right. Others might be page divisions that are more to do with page structure.
Right. There's a lot of different aspects of this, and you know, there's, you know, the HTML semantics. There's, you know, the styling, you know, which is more arbitrary. You could call that pretty much whatever you want, I guess. But there's a few different aspects to this.
You know, I think terminology is always a key thing with technical adoption. Figuring out a way to clearly and easily talk to things is a big part. And, you know, fundamentally, TreeSaver is still a bit young, so we're trying to both nail this down in terms of making it easier to use the framework, but also just easier to talk to and easier just for people to get on a quick level. You know, the problem is, though, in a lot of ways, we're introducing new things. Every design tool out there pretty much ever has you start with fixing the page size and going from there, and often just having fixed content. And oftentimes our designs kind of throw both of those assumptions away. So you neither know the content, nor do you know the actual size of your canvas or how things are going to react. And that's this multidimensionality that becomes kind of tough to think about. When the web first started, a lot of designers couldn't make that leap from straight print where you have just one set of content to doing basically templated design where you never know, oh, is there going to be enough text to fit in this column? You know, what if I don't have a photo in this article? And, you know, we're kind of layering another level of complexity on top of that. And it can be tough to kind of think about it that way.
So, Philippe, how does this play then into the people who are saying, well, we need to, I mean, you look at something like The Daily, which is, you know, powered by a very robust CMS behind the scenes, but it's delivered essentially as an iOS app. Why should people look at something like this to deliver their content instead of one of the, you know, one of the native solutions that exist for iOS or for Android or for one of the others? In other words, why HTML5 CSS framework as opposed to a native iOS app in general?
You know, The Daily is a great example. Their development costs, which I know include acquisitions, were somewhere around the $30 million range to get that first issue out the door with all the infrastructure, including CMS and app development. Their weekly production costs, last I heard, are about $500,000 a week. So that includes, you know, probably everything from the programmers to server guys, but also people literally laying out each article by hand right. on horizontal and vertical formats. And I think that's kind of your hint into why you have advantages in doing something like algorithmic layout. And let me back up for a second. You know, you asked about HTML.
Yeah.
And there's one big advantage for HTML is that, you know, the fact that The Daily doesn't run on a Galaxy tab, doesn't run on any other platform or even on the PC is kind of a hint of why there's an advantage to going with something that's web-based. Now, regardless of your web-based or not platform choice, and that is the other aspect of doing algorithmic design or not. So you look at something like a Wired magazine, The Daily, Time, and a lot of these iPad apps, they're literally laid out in InDesign every day by a staff.
Right.
You know, we talked to one client who's doing an iPad app, and it's a staff of 9 doing that. Now think about 9 salaries every week to produce your magazine, and that's only for one actual exact screen size, and that's the iPad. Now what happens if Jobs releases the iPad 7-inch, or if you want to go onto the Zoom, or the iPad Galaxy, or the RIM Playbook? Each have a different set of resolution. Now ignoring technology, you have to actually go there and change the layout and create, instead of creating 2 layouts, now you're creating 4, or 8, or 16 someday. So the idea is for most cases, you can't sit there and lay everything out by hand, especially with any kind of breaking news. Imagine trying to keep track, you know, the poor designers who are sitting there chained to a desk trying to redesign right, every right. time a new breaking news happens on the election or from Libya or anything like that. So I think it's a big consideration to take into account.
I just wanted to say it's the Web Standards Project's message from 1998 all over again, right? In 1998, we were designing for IE3, IE4, Netscape 3, Netscape 4, and then, you know, Lord help you if you wanted to support Opera, and that just seemed ridiculous. And we're looking at the same thing. I'm not saying there's not a place for native apps for people of who course. Are dedicated to our particular platform, but it makes so much sense to me. You're a publisher. You're a news organization. You know, to have 9 people manually creating 15 different layouts as the list of devices that are supported keeps growing just seems a little silly, and especially in these days when news organizations are going out of business and firing people, laying people off, can't afford staff that they have.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a business decision. If you're somebody like the New York Times, and I know this from experience because this is what we did at Microsoft, oftentimes companies will come in and do the implementation for you. When we did the original Times Reader, we basically did a large initial chunk of the dev work. And then one of the guys who was working with us went over to the Times in order to keep that up. Adobe, when they came in and had it done in air, I think spent somewhere around $2 million to do that effort. And, you know, anytime a new platform comes out, either devs are sent over to the Times or there's a lot of help or cash sent over there. And again, this isn't to belittle in any way their tech team, which is very, very good. It's right. Just that they tend to have a bit of help. And if nothing else, they're given a lot of publicity. Now, not everybody's the New York Times. The pretty girls always get all their drinks bought for them at the bar. But all the rest of us have to pay for ourselves. And when it comes down to that, you have to really decide. I know Jeffrey gets all his drinks bought at South by Southwest probably. But you are very pretty. So the thing is, you know, if you have the cash and you can go and target people very, very individually, great. I mean, that's always going to be better than trying to do something automatic or algorithmic. The more artisanal you can get, if you've got the funds, yeah, no question. That's probably going to be a little bit better. But realistically, especially in today's climate for publishers, that's just not really going to happen. It's not very cost effective, and it's not a good strategy.
There are a number of questions I'd like to relay from the chat room about this. Before we do, we want to thank our second sponsor. It's sourcebits.com. These guys do software design and development. They do it for iOS, Android, Mac, and they build web apps too. So perfect sponsor for this conversation, it happens to be. But these guys are great. They really focus on emerging technologies, and their deep experience and successful track record ensures that your idea, whatever it is, will be transformed into a fully functional, well-tested, stunning world-class app in no time. You can save time and money with these guys too. It's not like going to a high school kid who says that he can design your app and then you never hear from him again. These guys actually are professional. They know what they're doing, and they have an amazing track record. So check them out at sourcebits.com, cutting edge app development. Thanks very much to them for sponsoring this episode. So here's one of the questions that came in from the chat room. Alan the Hauser, one of our beloved nerds, asks, is there a way to deliver TreeSaver content to iPad users? I'm sure he also means any mobile users, but outside of the browser. And he says, for example, iTunes Store or the iBook Store. In other words, is there a way to consolidate this down and deliver this to somebody? Is that something?
Or use it as the basis of an app?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And that's one of the things we're doing. Nomad, actually, one of our first clients here, they'll be releasing an iPhone app soon. I think it's on track for either April or early May, depending on when the approvals come through. The great thing about HTML is all of these platforms let you embed a browser in an app. And actually, you know, the dirty secret of a lot of these apps is so many of them are actually powered by HTML view within them that it's not even funny, right? If you go into a Flipboard article and read in the article view, that's actually running within a web browser inside the iPad. If you look at just about every RSS reader, that's running HTML in there too. So in essence, we're doing something very similar, where basically we construct a little shell around the content. In Nomad's case, we add support for, you know, downloading an entire zip file of an issue and storing it offline and some of those management type stuff there. But it's all relatively simple because the heavy lifting in terms of layout is already done and works using HTML. So you're still using that same content and still the same logic, but now you get to do App Store distribution, which is very advantageous.
Yeah, that's huge. I think that's something that so many people are thinking about is how do you leverage these other marketplaces that exist. So we've been talking a lot about iPad and iOS and things like that. But there are a large number of Android users out there and other platform users. Does this work as well in those kind of environments, or are you kind of gearing it for iOS?
Same principle works. So we're doing development for Android as well in terms of our wrappers. And as these other platforms spin up, we'll tackle all of those as well.
How do you keep up with that? How do you keep up? There's so many new browsers. There's always new versions. It's one thing to just watch Apple and say, okay, they're coming out with a new version of Mobile Safari we need to pay attention to. But when you combine that with all of the desktop browsers that are out there and combine that again with Android and all of the different versions that are Android, and unlike Apple in the Android side of the world, people very often are married to these older versions of integrated browsers. Their device that they got a year ago can't be upgraded to the newer version, so it's not like they can go and get that new browser. They're stuck with that old one, and they're married to it. They're married to it forever, and they'll never be able to upgrade. So do you have to support all of those legacy clients, or do you tell a whole world of Android users, or for example, I'm just picking on Android, do you tell a whole world of users out there that, sorry, guys, you're not going to be able to keep up, or do you basically say, we'll commit to supporting all of these old browsers indefinitely forever, and what does that do to you?
You know, it's there's been a couple strategies. One is very, very defensive coding. If things kind of go wrong, or if the browser doesn't have the capabilities we expect, we kind of drop out and just go back to what you would see if you don't have JavaScript enabled in the browser. Basically, all TreeServer is written using a principle called progressive enhancement. And the idea is that the content without JavaScript is still all there on the page, which means that any old browser, say your IE6s or even your Lynx or whatever else, can still read and see everything. And Google can still spider it. Lynx, it's an old text browser.
I like that you name check Lynx.
My first browser was Netscape 0.9. Actually, really, it was Lynx. So yeah, it was fun.
So Scott pulling his hair out? It looks like he's got a full head of hair still. But I mean, trying to deal with all of this and thinking about Scott, what the compatibilities are. I mean, you've got to be going nuts.
Yeah, it's really complicated. So it's the only device I specifically target is mobile devices. So luckily, Android and iPhone, for the most part, all of the screen resolutions are the same. So I just, target all of those mobile devices and send them a specific template. Other than that, it's all sort of column-based. I drop a column off and, make sure stuff shows up. Really the best it can on other devices. So it is a lot of give and take. Vertical resolution is the most premium resolution. Windows devices with, Internet Explorer and a ton of Chrome, people with all these toolbars, that's the hardest point to hit almost. But it's, we do our best to optimize for all devices, and it turns out it works really well, and we can hit specific sizes. Like we're working for a client now that wants iPad optimized sizes, and we could do that, but again, it's sort of you have to rebuild all those templates, page one, page two, odd, even. So it's sort of an exponential growth every key size you hit.
It's a lot of work.
It gets into a lot of work, and maybe you want an article template, a feature template, another feature template, table of contents template. So it does sort of balloon out. But the nice thing is, if you want this on sort of a simple site with, a news site with one template or a blog with one template, it can be as simple or as complex as you want it to be. So,
what Scott's alluding to is something we call a template explosion. And when you start trying to hyper optimize for a lot of these devices, you can end up having to specialize so much that you end up with just so many different grids, and it becomes really a bear to manage. And we're trying to figure out how to deal with that a bit better. But really, in a lot of cases, we just recommend, stop trying to worry about every single last corner case here and get something that works, you know, at least 80-90% of the time very well, and then, you know, concentrate your energies on the important parts, basically.
Right. So you could absolutely, you know, go the app route and, you know, create InDesign pixel perfect templates for every device. But, you know, that's not our goal with TreeSaver. Our goal is to create sort of a base set of dynamic templates and, you know, really, really target a wide variety of devices with one basic set.
I'm just curious here, when I think about the future of this and how it could really affect the way that anybody can publish their stuff. I mean, this really is the gateway for people to be able to just say, you know what, I want to deliver this kind of content. It's just there, and it almost seems too easy. What are your plans to kind of go and continue supporting this for the future? Because this is the thing that as developers, I always hear this question, and the question goes something like this: if we start building our infrastructure around this technology, we either need to A, count on the fact that they're going to be around to keep building it and supporting it and making it great, or B, we're going to need to become experts on this ourselves, and this is just a stepping stone to get there. And I think that's something that, because this seems so cool and people are really going to want to use this, I mean, why wouldn't you want to use this? That's the next question: is how do we know, you know, what are your plans? How soon until you have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people working on this every day? And that's the kind of thing that people would want. They want to support, or they want to know that this is there. So what's the answer to that? And how can people who want to make sure you're a success help out?
You know, Dan, that's a big part of the reason we went open source is, you know, to one, involve the community and get some help there. And it is a big part of our message, right? You know, use the web and open platform all the way through browsers to the actual JavaScript. But also, you know, that means that anybody can go and develop this and maintain it and make sure it still works, right? You look at stuff like jQuery and all sorts of other JavaScript libraries that are out there opened and very well supported due to community support. So the idea is, you know, if the terrible thing happens and we fail or go away, whatever else, there's still basically that code is still out there and free and able to be worked on.
Yeah,
that is fantastic. I'm going to steal Dan Benjamin's question now. I'm going to say thank you, guys, but we're running low on time. And where can people go to find out more about you and TreeSaver?
Yeah.
So the company is at treesaver.net, which I think we showed. And then the actual JavaScript framework is treesaverjs.com. Yeah, we're working on rectifying that domain name situation.
I often type treesaver.js and then Google it and then realize, oh, that was a mistake.
But people can go. They can download this right now, and they should. They'd go to treesaverjs.com and start experimenting with this. You were saying you're building little plugins and integrations for the existing CMSs and systems that are out there. Which ones, before we end, which ones are you guys supporting right now, and which ones are coming?
You know, the first target is WordPress. Just because that's the most common. We've actually, one of our clients has been working on a Drupal module, so we'll see how that goes, and maybe we'll move into to throw some more resources there. We're also, for a lot of clients as an option, we're offering the ability to convert automatically from an RSS feed. So we'll basically slurp in a full content, or even partial content, in some cases RSS feed, and then automatically convert that into a TreeSaver format.
Wow.
That's amazing. That's Flipboard,
yeah.
My friend.
Yeah.
And you're also on the Twitters, Philippe. You're at FORTES.
Yep, my last name.
Right, and Scott Kellum. You're at
Scott Kellum.
Scott Kellum.
How easy is that?
Too easy.
And Jeffrey, you're Zeldman on Twitter. I'm Dan Benjamin. In case people didn't know that. And guys, thanks so much for being our guest today. Good luck. Can't wait to see what you guys come out with next. Good luck to you. Thanks.
Great. Thanks for having us.
And we'd like to thank everybody for tuning in. You can catch up previous episodes of this show on 5x5.tv and see the other shows that we do. People keep telling me I don't cross-promote the shows enough, so I'll do that now. You can hear a show that I do with Merlin Mann called Back to Work. You can hear a show called Hypercritical with John Siracusa, who you may know from Ars Technica, and Build and Analyze with Marco Arment, the creator of Instapaper. And a whole bunch of new shows, Content Talks from Christina Halverson. I could go on promoting, and this is why I don't. So just go there, 5x5.tv. Thanks to our sponsor, sourcebits.com and audiblepodcast.com. go get your free book. And that's it. So everybody, thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. Have a great week.